This episode of the Topcast is proudly supported by Forte.
Hi listeners, it's Tim here. Two quick updates before we begin the show. Firstly, for those of you in Melbourne, Australia, next Thursday, the 29th of September, we're going to be meeting up for a teacher lunch. I'm so excited to finally be able to connect with teachers here in person. The last time I did that was in January 2020, and we know what happened after that. So if you're interested and can come along, just head to topmusic.co/meetup. to find out more and also reserve your seat today. And secondly, we're soon to release our long-awaited follow-up to my four-chord composing course, one of our flagship courses. It's called our Complete Guide to Songwriting course, and it's going to take any teacher from a complete songwriting newbie or never done it before to a confident coach, and it will be released to our Top Music Pro members next week. Now, if you're not a Top Music Pro member, that's totally fine. Look out for details of our live stream where we'll be digging into some of the content and telling you more about what you can expect. All right, on with the show. Tim Topham here, and welcome back to the Topcast from topmusic.co. At Top Music, we love guiding and supporting music teachers just like you to engage, motivate, and inspire your students and run the most sustainable studio business possible using our integrated music teaching approach. And it's great to be with you for another week here of the Topcast as we inch ever closer to the magic episode 300. By the way, episode 300, we have some big updates coming. I can't wait to share those with you, but stay tuned. In a few weeks, we will release everything. Now, this is episode number 297, and it's titled Embracing Special Needs Teaching. And it's actually an episode from our archives, which was originally published back in August 2020 as episode number 204. Our specialist and guest, Top Music Pro course creator, Selena Pistoresi, will be joining me to unpack this often misunderstood area of teaching, and one where we get lots of questions all the time, and I see the questions coming up in Facebook groups too. And so we'll be giving you practical strategies to improve your teaching in this area in the future. And I'm especially excited that after the success of our Find Students Fast ebook release last month, we're really excited to offer you our latest ultimate free guide, which is now ready for download. It's called Top Music on Special Needs Teaching, and it covers everything you need to know to be a confident teacher of students with exceptionalities. With chapters covering which methods work best, how to understand and respond to difficult behaviors, perfect pitch, environmental considerations, how to introduce new activities, and even online teaching tips, we have you covered. You can download your free 64-page full-color reference today over at topmusic.co/special or at the show notes for this page at topmusic.co/episode297. My guest today is a lifelong pianist and has been a piano teacher for over a decade. She owns a studio in the San Francisco Bay Area, California, where she specializes in working with students with special needs. She equips teachers all over the world with the mindset, tools, and curriculum to teach students with special needs and to help their studios flourish. Welcome to the show, Selena Pistoresi. Great to have you with us on the podcast. Thanks for coming along.
Thanks for having me. I've been listening for years, and I'm so happy to be here.
Super to connect with you. And you're actually one of our Top Music Pro Evolution members, so I've actually been hanging out with you a fair bit recently, which is always fun because we have our... Every 2 weeks, we meet together online to chat about our business plans and things like that. And it's just been wonderful seeing your progression over the last few months as you've been working towards not just growing a studio, but also looking beyond the studio and how you can create resources for other teachers on the subject of today's podcast, actually. So it's been great to dive in with that with you. So how did you come to specialize in teaching students with special needs? Was it a conscious decision, or did it just kind of evolve?
Yeah, you know, like most things in my life, it was kind of a series of accidents. I've been teaching piano since I was in high school, and it was a part-time job throughout high school and university. And then my last year of university, I got a job at a brand new startup inclusion school in Silicon Valley where I live. So being an inclusion school, the goal was to have students with special needs, as well as those who are typically mainstreamed and those who are gifted, all in the same classroom at the same time.
Oh, wow. Okay. So both those that perhaps are struggling and need more support and those that need more extension.
Exactly.
Right. And it was called a startup school. What could only happen in Silicon Valley, surely.
It was so Silicon Valley, yeah. And so at first I did a lot of admin work, but as the school grew, my role changed and the director knew that I taught piano and studied music. So she said, why don't you just develop a music program? And I was like, okay. Yeah. So I started to dabble, but it was quite a task. Like I said, kids age 5 to 14, some with special needs, some without, all in the same classroom. So I got a really eclectic type of experience. And I also pulled out students one-on-one throughout the school day to teach piano lessons. And that's when I really started experimenting with teaching students with special needs piano. So I would say the main things I learned from that experience were that many of the students who had previously been classified as, quote, severe or low functioning, which I kind of hate that terminology, but it's still used. So students who were like nonverbal and who had severe motor skills challenges, many of them were actually incredibly musically gifted and had some, like, had perfect pitch or just had a huge affinity for music. And I also learned that there was kind of a lack of information out there on working with students with special needs. So I realized that teaching piano was my favorite thing that I did. And I left the school and I went full time with my studio in 2015.
Very cool. And so what does your school or studio look like now? And where do you teach?
I'm based in San Jose, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's called Cultivate Music Studio. And I personally teach about 50 to 55 students every week.
And I, yeah, huge.
It's a lot. And I also teach music garden, early childhood group music classes. And I've also had other teachers on board at various points to run summer camps and teach piano as well.
Oh my goodness. That is a huge teaching load. So the 50 to 55 doesn't include the music garden groups?
Correct. Yeah, that's just private piano students.
Oh, wow. Selena, how do you do that? That's full on.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to start talking about teaching students with special needs more. I want more teachers doing it. I want to hire more teachers doing it. So
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And so do you mainly teach children or are there some adults there too?
Mainly children, although I do have a few adult students and I love teaching them. But since I started my studio with, I think, 4 students with special needs and it grew 100% by referral, it's just turned into my accidental area of expertise.
And you've got lots of experience to share, which I'm delighted to get to today.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, we should probably just clarify what we mean by special needs as well, because this can be a huge spectrum of situations right. that children or people find themselves in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can think of special needs as being kind of in 4 broad categories. We can have physical, developmental, behavioral / emotional, and sensory impaired. So this is a generalization because there's also quite a bit of overlap between those categories. But physical special needs are chronic conditions and diseases like epilepsy, asthma, muscular dystrophy, and so on. Developmental special needs are probably what you think of when you think of special needs. So like autism or autism spectrum disorder, Down syndrome, ADHD, dyslexia, and so on. And then behavioral emotional category, we have things like obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety, depression, and then sensory impaired would be things like blindness or visual impairments, as well as deaf or hearing impairments.
Well, I mean, that is just a massive spectrum. So, I mean, any discussion right. on this topic is going to be a generalization, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
By necessity. And while we'd love to provide resources for every single different special need there is out there, there's only so much time in the day. So let's focus perhaps on what is the most common special need that you see in your students at the moment?
Yeah, I definitely won't claim to know everything about all special needs, but most of my students are autistic. So these days, about 1 in 54 children are autistic. So most piano teachers will likely get at least 1 request for this over the course of their teaching careers. I also want to take a quick minute to touch on the terminology because some people might have just cringed when they heard me say autistic. I know a lot of people try to be as inclusive and sensitive as possible when discussing special needs. And you'll probably come across a lively debate over whether we should say people with autism or autistic people. And at first glance, it might make sense or feel more polite to use the person first language, like my student has autism. But many autistic people themselves prefer to refer to themselves as autistic as a way of recognizing that their autism is part of their identity and their neurology as opposed to a disease that needs to be cured or fixed. So I think it's really important to recognize neurodiversity, which is basically the concept that brain differences are normal rather than deficits.
Yeah, so, and if you can hear the printer in the background, my son's just printing his schoolwork for today's remote learning.
Good I can't timing. Hear it, actually.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I wonder whether, is it probably just a good idea to talk to people about the terminology you use or talk to the parents about it to try and get that right?
Yeah, I mean, even parents sometimes will say things in front of their own kids, like, this is my kid, he's low functioning. And it makes my soul die a little bit, because this kid can hear you, you know, they understand, even if they're not verbal. And so, yeah, I think it's important to talk about it. And it's also just an interesting way of thinking about the brain and neurodiversity. Like, maybe these students, they're not suffering from a disorder. Maybe they're just thinking differently, and we need to kind of accommodate that in our teaching.
Yeah, that's a wonderfully positive way to look at it too, particularly when you talk about things like perfect pitch and the skills that these children have despite what's going on for them.
Forte is a free alternative to Zoom, purpose-built for music teachers. Forte puts you and your teaching style at the center of the educational experience. In particular, Forte offers industry-leading audio quality. This is what Zoom sounds like. Now listen to the same music recorded on Forte using the same equipment. Our mission is to empower teachers to do their best teaching online. Sign up for free and start teaching your students on Forte today. Just go to fortelessons.com. That's FORTELESSONS.com.
What would you find then are the most challenging things about teaching special needs students? Because it must be really hard sometimes.
You know, yeah, it can be, but really any teaching can be. So in the beginning, I think it was challenging because I took behaviors that I saw at face value. So if a student was bouncing around the room or covering their ears or not answering my questions, I would just get frustrated. Like, why is the student misbehaving? Or do they not get it? What am I doing wrong? But as soon as I was able to make the mental shift and understand that outward behavior doesn't reflect inner understanding or ability, it was a lot easier to let these things go and simply keep teaching. Also, you know, there can be some behaviors that are considered aggressive, but those are usually mitigated when you learn how to talk to a student with respect and in an age-appropriate way, and when you're teaching them in a way that they're able to demonstrate their knowledge.
So, I think that last point is probably that's what I've experienced before when I've had a child in this category. It's like when you work out the right way to connect with them and what works for them and the environment and all of those things and routines and things like that, that's when the aggression, if that is one of their behaviors, tends to calm down. That's what I've found anyway.
Right. And anyone would feel really frustrated at best and aggressive at worst if they felt not understood. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then I would say also there's a unique element at play when it comes to parents sometimes. So, you know, sometimes parents have their kids enrolled in like different kinds of therapies, particularly behavior interventions. They might want your piano lessons to be a continuation of behavior interventions. And sometimes it conflicts with the way that you'd want to teach the student. So there can be kind of a dance with the parents as well.
Well, we love the parental dances. We all do. Regardless of our students. It's funny, isn't it? I've become great friends with some of my students' parents and others. Not the kind of people I want to hang out with at all. So we've talked about some challenges. What about the most enjoyable part of it? Because there are some absolutely, you know, amazing times you can have with these children when they have a win and
absolutely
get excited and things like that. So tell us about a few of those for you.
Yeah, well, I love seeing all of the non-piano progress that students make inevitably. Like playing the piano is a highly motivating activity. So a lot of times it helps students make huge gains in their fine motor skills and their visual tracking skills. Sometimes their occupational therapists will say, like, what has your kid been doing? Now they can do this thing that we've been working on. Of course, it's not a substitute for therapy, but it's just another way to work on skills. And then also because of, you know, a lot of times they're differing brains and neurology and their musical gifts, like perfect pitch, which is way more common among people with autism and a few other conditions like Williams syndrome than it is in the general population. These students can make really interesting connections and get so much pleasure out of learning theory. Like, for example, I have one 7-year-old autistic student with perfect pitch who in one lesson learned how to play Don't Stop Believin' by Journey on the piano with both hands. So full chords in the right hand, wow. Left hand playing the bass line, singing the lyrics in his tiny 7-year-old voice. And he lives for like the circle of fifths and transposing. So I started calling out random keys for him to transpose into, and he did on the spot. And this is a kid who has a hard time tying his shoes, and his teachers think that his grade level and his like intellectual age are a few years behind what they actually are. So it's really cool to see these kids display their deep understanding and their creative genius.
That's wonderful. So do you find most of the time parents will, when they enroll a student with you, be able to say, oh, yes, my child's been diagnosed and here's the situation? Or do you sometimes have students coming to you and you have to go, something going on here. Maybe I need to speak to the parents.
Yeah. So I've never suggested to a parent that there may need to be a diagnosis, even if I've had my suspicions. First of all, I've seen a lot, but I'm not a doctor and I wouldn't want to step outside the bounds of my expertise. But also importantly, I found that the diagnosis might not really even matter sometimes. Like for example, autism can manifest in countless ways. So it's important to just meet the student, get to know them for who they are. And most of the time, though, parents will let you know about any diagnoses.
All right. So let's get really practical. What's for you the first step in building a really strong teaching foundation and relationship with a special needs student in your studio?
This is my favorite question. The very first step is presuming competence. So the student comes in and no matter what they do or how they appear, they say something that you think is really weird. It's important to speak to them in age-appropriate language and assume they understand you. So sometimes when people meet students with special needs, especially if they're nonverbal or don't have reliable speech, it's tempting to talk slowly or in like a sing-songy voice, but it can be really patronizing and frustrating to the student. So to gain respect, believe they're capable of understanding, and that'll go a long way right in the beginning.
And what about the physical environment of the studio? If they're coming into your space, do you need to make considerations before they come in?
Yeah, that would be, another tip I give is it's important to make your studio environment sensory friendly. So if the student has, many students that come to you will come with sensory integration issues. So they might be oversensitive or undersensitive to input from lights, sounds, smells, textures. So, you know, consider the lighting in your studio. Try to avoid overhead fluorescent lights if you can. Go for lamps or natural lighting with shades if you need to. Try to eliminate outside sounds. Use unscented everything. Scents are a really big one, actually.
That would include deodorants and perfumes and things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you're used to wearing your favorite scented lotion, it can be hugely distracting for the whole lesson. And, you know, even storing things in like a closed cabinet instead of on an open bookshelf, that can go a really long way in just maintaining, you know, not causing visual clutter and helping a student not be overwhelmed.
So if you've got piles of music everywhere, toys, stuff, they just spread all over the floor like online teaching has caused for us all, you might want
to
fix that up.
It's actually really hard to go back and forth. So yeah, you'll have to pick them up.
All right. So what about some other tips that you've found work really well, either with some quick ideas or just general teaching thoughts?
Yeah. One that gets kind of thrown around a lot, which I totally agree with, is provide some structure in your lesson. So, you know, students with special needs can have a lot of anxiety around what comes next and how long each activity will last. So it might require a bit more planning on your part, but create a schedule with the student at the beginning of the lesson. And by, you can say out loud each item and write it on a whiteboard or a piece of paper. If the student is verbal, of course, you can just ask, do you want to improvise first or the lesson book first? But if the student is nonverbal, you can say and write your two options on two separate pieces of paper and have them point to the one they want. And even if students don't seem to be choosing intentionally, just giving them the choice is really important. And then later you can say, well, you chose this one, so we're doing that.
That's good. And what about, do games work in the same way? Like, is it better to try and keep children kind of centered and on the bench and kind of, you know, still, or is it better to get them moving around, or will it really just depend on the child like it does in any other lesson?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. I would say if a student is having a really hard time sitting on the bench, or even a kind of hard time, let them get up. I mean, you can do so much from standing in the middle of the room, or I actually have a couple of electric keyboards in my studio. And if they go sit on the floor, I'll just bring the keyboard and we'll just keep going on the floor. I mean,
why not?
It's okay. Just meet them wherever they are.
It's about being flexible, ultimately.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I've had to become so flexible.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I've learned in this whole lockdown, remote learning, all this kind of stuff, is that I've had to completely change my own expectations of myself as a teacher and as a parent and as a business person about how much I can do and what's okay. And so I was getting really frustrated at the start when I just didn't seem to be getting anything done in either lessons or in my work or because of the interruptions and all that kind of stuff. And I think, would I be right in saying that would be the same for teaching students with special needs? It'd be about just realizing that maybe for some children, just playing a note or singing something in a lesson could be the most amazing thing, and that's okay.
Yeah, definitely we need to go a little easier on ourselves. Of course, you can get the parents more involved in online lessons and kind of train them on how to support the students, but a lot of times it's just going to be, you might spend 5 minutes trying to show the student where to put their hand on the piano, and that's just okay.
Mm. I want to come back to the online lesson question in a moment. But before that, mm-hmm. I remember in some of our previous conversations, we were talking about methods and approaches for reading. And of course, I, like a lot of teachers, really love methods that move all around the piano as soon as possible. You start up here and you're cascading down, you're at the bottom, and then you're at the top. And you've told me that maybe that's not the best thing for these students.
Yeah. So in general, I totally agree that students should get comfortable as early as possible moving all over the keyboard and not being married to any one position. But students who have poor motor skills, especially fine motor skills, they often can't initiate movements on their own or make purposeful movement. So some students can't even hover their hand over the piano if you ask them to. So I think it's really important to start in a single five-finger position. Like I use C position in the beginning. So they can start to develop keyboard awareness. You know, there's still that component of your C, then D, E, F, G. But for now, your thumb is always your C finger. Your finger two is always your D finger, just so that they have something to anchor them right in the beginning. And they're still playing songs that are fairly interesting. Five notes is better than the normal two or three black keys in like typical pre-reading. But that way, it just kind of draws them in and they'll have time to build their motor skills and keyboard awareness first. And then, of course, you can always branch out to other positions.
Yeah, and do it at the speed that some students will get through that and they'll be fine with that, and others will may need to stay in C position for a very long time. I've heard some of my members talk about some students needing a year or more in a very limited position, and that's making progress for them. But that's just the different approaches we need for our students.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the biggest challenges, of course, to hit everyone, but particularly teachers of special needs students, is COVID-19 and the move to online lessons. So how has this impacted your teaching?
Yeah, at first it was a huge adjustment. I think for all of us it was. We weren't, myself and the parents, we weren't really sure how it would go. But in some respects, it's been a challenge because, you know, I haven't been able to play duets with the students or use hands-on physical prompting to help develop motor skills. But there's actually a huge benefit too, which is that, of course, it's critical that parents are involved in practicing, especially when their students have special needs. And so I've always worked with parents during the lesson to make sure they know exactly how the methods work, how to point, how to give hand support. But when we moved online, I realized how many parents had either never practiced with their students at home, or they thought they knew how to support their kids, but they weren't quite doing it right. And it was a really good chance for me to peek in to their home practice environment and make some minor adjustments to the way they work together. Even just saying, hey, don't forget to point to each letter while they play, or, you know, they look like they're sitting a little too low, can you put some pillows on the bench? And it made huge improvements in the students playing.
It must be even more vital for parents to be involved in these lessons than perhaps with other students who are more self-directed.
Yeah, for better or worse, we need the parents there most of the time.
Have you had any parents sort of say, I don't have time? And what do you do then?
I did. I had a small handful, two or three or four, that just wouldn't. And I just said, for now, we're not working together. It's just not really feasible to do the online lessons without their input. But I do have a couple students who maybe have been taking lessons for a couple years, and they're doing pretty well on their own too. So just depends on the student's level.
Mm. So apart from getting the parents involved, any other tips for teachers moving online with their students? I mean, most of us have been doing it for some time now, but they maybe struggling still, or I know that in the United States, you're starting to be moving back to schools, but some schools mm-hmm. are closed, some are open. I mean, it's all over the place, isn't it? But any sort of more general tips?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the usual ones apply, like, you know, be very concise about where you want students to start from. I think screen share is your best friend. If you can have a digital copy of your students' music and then pull it up and annotate to show where you want them to play from, that's great.
So screen sharing your iPad or something with their score on it where you can circle things right in front of them.
Yeah. Yes. And along those same lines, you can take advantage of Zoom's annotate and screen share feature. And I'd love to pull up the whiteboard and then type whatever I'm saying as I'm saying it. Not every word, but, you know, if I'm teaching a new concept. So that way students with sensory integration issues can intake, they can get the information in a couple of different channels. You know, they can hear me say it and they could read it while I type it. And a lot of times that kind of goes the extra mile and gives them what they need to really understand it. So that's right. Actually something that I'll miss. being able to do, like, pull up a whiteboard and also being able to just quickly record something of a part of the lesson. You know, those are things that I like about the online lesson.
What is California's move as schools return?
I think everything is still distance learning when school goes back in about a month.
Right.
So I haven't actually figured out exactly what everyone's doing because I'm just staying online. But
yeah,
it's looking like everybody's just getting used to this now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting seeing in our forums and things, photos of people with studios, and they've put up plexiglass between them and their students. Mm-hmm. Obviously mask and hand washing and sanitization and things. So, I mean, even if doors are open and students are coming back in, it's a different experience.
It's really difficult, especially with students with special needs who might not be able to wear a mask, sensory issues, or, you know, I have to touch their hand to help them play.
Right.
So I'm probably just going to wait until, you know, everyone can just go fully back to in-person.
Yeah. It's a real challenge, as we all know.
Yeah.
So before we wrap things up, Selena, any kind of final tips or thoughts or anything we might have missed from today?
Yeah, I would say, you know, something that comes up all the time is that teachers say, my student has perfect pitch, so I'm going to teach them by ear. And I wanted to just challenge that a little bit and just kind of say that when students have perfect pitch, their ear will overpower any visual input that they get. So it's really important to never sing or play anything for students before you show them how to read it. So it sounds counterintuitive, like they have perfect pitch. Why don't you just play it for them and they'll play it back?
I see. If you play it and they can hear it, they'll play it back without reading the music. So if you want them to learn to read,
they just instantly memorize it and they'll never read the notes.
Right.
That's just a question that I see floating around a lot. So I wanted to talk about it.
And you've said there's a greater than half chance that a lot of these students will have perfect pitch. Is that right?
Yeah. It is possible that all of them or almost all of them do. It's really hard to tell based on the way that the research is done. But in my experience, almost all of them do. So
wow, it's extraordinary.
It's just a different way of teaching. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good little tip to keep in mind. Selena, thank you so much for joining us today. It's super.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
And where can people find out more about what you do?
You can find me at my website, which is notablepiano.com. So notablepiano.com.
Fantastic. All right. Check out Selena's great work there. And thanks again, Selena.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's interview. Make sure you go and download our free new Ultimate Guide to Teaching Special Needs Students. It's over at our show notes today at topmusic.co/episode297. And next week on the podcast, we are diving into another area where we get questions all the time, and that is multi-level group teaching. Is it possible? How does it work? We have the specialist ready to answer all your questions. Until then, I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast. I'll speak to you again next week. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.